Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello everyone, I'm Harry Sethi and welcome to the last episode of Rival Recon for the season. And what a campaign it's been from these record-breaking Reds. With one game to go and only a point separating Klopp and Guardiola's sides at the top of the Premier League, the title is remarkably still up for grabs, and Liverpool have a chance of sealing the deal in front of a packed Anfield crowd if things go their way. The Reds still have to win, though, and Bruno Lage's Wolves side stand in their way. So on this week's show, I'm delighted to welcome on Richard Hobbs from Wolves Fancast to give us his views on how their season has unfolded and what work needs to be done to help them kick on next season. Welcome, Rich.
Hi, how's it going?
Not bad, not bad. You know, it's the final... the final Rival Recon of the season that we're doing here. And there was a point in the season, I think, where, certainly on a Liverpool perspective, wasn't sure how sort of important these last few games were going to be. And then, yeah, sort of January onwards, they've really sort of made sure that, yeah, each and every one of these games has mattered. And so it's been interesting doing this preview sort of show ahead of each one and just discovering sort of how other team seasons have gone. And this is the final game of the season. And so I wanted to ask, just before we get into sort of how you think things have gone, at the start of the season, new manager, but sort of, I suppose, comparatively little investment in the squad, what were your expectations for Wolves' season?
I think going into the season, I think it was very much a case of at least finishing above... on or where we finished last season, which I think was, lower mid-table. And also trying to play a nicer brand of football, dare I say. It's a bit of a crude thing to say because,
right,
you know, no one's got a God-given right to be in the Premier League and, you know, to be a comfortably mid-table team. You know, the next thing you want is to either push on league-wise or actually to be entertained. And the last season of Nuno, unfortunately, wasn't particularly entertaining. And I think I probably said at the start of the season, I think mine was, you know what, if we're able to finish 10th and play better football, I don't see any Wolves fan who not take that. And to, you know, to arguably be in a position where we could finish 8th, I don't think we will do, to be honest. But, you know, to finish in the top half, I don't think a club of Wolves standing can be too disappointed with that over the course of the season.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, I mean, you mentioned two things there. Sort of one, it was important to you to try and see, a more expansive style of football. I think that was always one of the things that I remember when I spoke to guests in the past, that they had levelled a little bit at previous managers, certainly sort of
you know, Espirito Santo as well. I mean, how sort of things went. It's sort of strange how things ended for him, and sort of left on favourable terms and then quickly took that other job that was ill-advised. And then the Spurs tenure worked out terribly for him. But yeah, the one thing I used to hear quite often was, can we be a bit more adventurous? You know, what would happen if we let these players off the hook a little bit? And actually, it used to come back again and again whenever I discussed it with Wolves fans, to if you were going to try and be a bit more expansive and a bit more progressive in how you played, perhaps you would have to actually change sort of the defensive structure of the team, right? And perhaps that would mean a pretty difficult sort of period for the likes of stalwarts like Connor Cody and stuff, in terms of his ability to play in a back four, perhaps. I mean, is that valid, do you think, in terms of sort of that there have been some sticking points as to maybe why the team hasn't been able to fully transition to this new desired style?
Yeah, and it is essentially down to that. I think when Bruno Lage joined, he was fully intending to play for the back. It was the system he played when he was at Benfica. He came in and all his interviews, it was around playing a similar formation. And I think after two games in pre-season, he realised he doesn't have the players to play that formation, because we'd spent 4 years under a manager playing a back three and had brought in players to play in a back three. And however, Connor Cody is a hero, cult figure, tremendous leader. There are probably question marks about whether he could do it in a back four when he is not protected either side by two centre-halves. And it does hold Wolves back to a degree. And you can play with a back three / back five, however you want to look at it, and still be attacking. But time and again, we've shown that we're missing out on either that extra player in midfield or that extra player up front because we have an additional centre-back. And that is to essentially, as the manager almost alluded to with the comments he made at the start, that is to protect players. Mm. It's not to advance us further. It is more to protect the players that we've got, and not, it hamstrings us because we then don't have that necessary attacking mentality at times. And it's been difficult because, ironically, the first three games of the season, we played really good attacking football and we lost all three games 1-0. And it was against Leicester, Man United and Spurs. And we lost 1-0 in each game. And I think all Wolves fans saw, you know what, there is potential here. But then you also do need to get points on the board. So a lot of our wins have been quite efficient. They have been, you know, by small margins. And the goals have had to be spread about because we don't have a lot of firepower up front anyway.
Yeah.
This season. But it does mean that when you're working on fine margins, whether it's at the back, and we've been, bar the last six games, we've been fantastic defensively. If the defence doesn't quite hold up and you're starting to concede a couple more goals than you usually would, if you then don't have the ability to really push forward, it shows. And those 1-0 wins all of a sudden become draws, or they become 1-0 defeats. And that's what's happened sort of second half of the season. So I think there's going to have to be a lot of question marks in the off-season. I know we're talking about the current season in terms of moving players on, and there does seem to be a little bit of a atmosphere at the club that there does need to be a evolution on some of these players, because they've been at the club for 5-6 plus years now in some cases, or joined in Nuno's first season either in Championship or when we got promoted, and it just feels like some of them need to get moved on if we're going to change the style of play, which I think is needed at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I remember speaking about it at the end of last season. It was definitely the ambition that I heard from Wolves fans, from Wolves journalists around. Yeah, there was this ambition to change the style of play. But yeah, there's some very tough questions, as you mentioned there. I mean, when you're dealing with cult, you know, sort of cult figures in the squad, who perhaps, I mean, I'm not sort of completely undermining it and putting it all on Connor Cody, but I think there are some players there who I don't think they are very well suited to the style that you'd like to move to. And so perhaps, yeah, it does become time where it's just the natural end of a cycle. You thank them very much, you move them on, and then you embark upon this new approach. Having said that, yeah, looking at Wolves this season, it was always, to me, it seemed like your very fine margins very well organized side, made it very difficult. Some of the pressing that we saw at times from Wolves, I thought was quite effective, but just how disciplined they were in their positioning as well. I remember the Liverpool game earlier in the season away at Wolves, just how difficult that was. And of course, in the end, we needed some Divock Origi sort last of minute magic.
Yeah.
And we just heard that he's set to depart now at the end of the season, which is a bittersweet moment. A man who one of the most unlikely of cult figures.
Yeah. It's really difficult to separate the emotional attachment to the landscape at the football club, and Conor Cody's a great example of that. He came in not with big status. He had a decent enough record at Huddersfield and, you know, came in as a solid Championship player. He was transformed into Nuno. It allowed him to bring out certain qualities which were there, and he'd carried through from, you know, his time at Liverpool youth team and the international setup when he was younger, and his leadership abilities. That isn't something that's just happened at Wolves. He's always had that.
I was going to say, just on his leadership abilities, I mean, is there a palpable difference when he's not in the side in terms of that sort of where leadership lies in the side? Or there are a couple of sort of senior figures there as well who sort of strike me as that they could be sort of leaders in the squad. Yeah,
it's less of when he isn't there. It's when he's not playing well. That's when really suffer, is how I describe it. So when he is notably not performing well, the whole team feels it, because he is in that fulcrum position in the team as that third centre half, whether you call it a sweep or however. A lot of the play naturally has to flow through him. And if he's not quite getting on the ball how he should do, or he's having to play in a deeper position, or he's almost essentially marked out of it by the opposition and restricting us, Wolves feel it. So when he's not on form, we do suffer. To be honest, he plays every game, so it's almost hard for me to say otherwise. But you're right. If the fact that, you know, we have other leaders in this team, we have Ruben Neves, who was captain of his clubs at a young age. You've got João Moutinho. No one can tell me he's not one of the most experienced players in, you know, European football currently. So my kind of viewpoint on Conor Cody is a lot of how we describe him, Wolves fans or general, pinpoint his intangibles. We talk about his leadership, his communication, his organisation, none of which are his footballing ability. When it comes to Ruben Neves, I will talk about his passing range. You'll talk about his long distance shooting, his tackling. And unfortunately, and it so pains me to say it with Conor Cody, if he isn't delivering that, if we are unorganised at the back, if we are looking, you know, like no one's talking at a set piece, unfortunately, then it comes down to him, because if he's not bringing that to the table, the question is, well, what is he bringing to the table? And we have managed to, you know, it has been a mutually beneficial relationship for Cody and Wolves in terms of how they've both developed alongside each other. And, you know, he's gone off and played for England. He's gone to major tournaments. And at the end of the day, if somebody does put in an offer of, let's say, 15 to 20 million, which is probably, I guess, his market value, Wolves have probably done very well out of that deal, I think. And it'll be sad to see him go to another team. But I think his leadership skills are replaceable, because I think anyone, you know, lots of players can eventually step into those areas. And I think for all players, footballing ability is replaceable as well.
Yeah, it's what his departure might unlock, isn't it? I mean, I've seen in the past sort of one player who can be really, really influential on the side, but perhaps a bit too influential, the team's too dependent on that player performing well or not performing well. They depart, and their departure unlocks the possibilities for different formation, different approach, maybe some new recruits who come in, change the identity of a side. And I think, based on what you were saying at the start of the season, you know, a mid-table finish, the fact that even with, perhaps we'll come on to talk about it, sort of very, very limited investment in the squad this time round, I think you can't look at what Bruno Lage has been able to do with the side, with the limitations that you've been talking about there, as, I mean, in my opinion, I think that's a success, right? If there's a plan, if there's a plan in the summer to rebuild and reinvest in the squad, as is needed, having secured this impressive finish with the comparative resources, yeah, I think that's a job. It's a job well done. The football might not have always been the prettiest at times, but there were reasons behind that, it seems to me. But if you were looking at the season actually now that we are at the end, and you were trying to pick a game where everything clicked, you know, this is some of the highlights of the season in terms of sort of the big wins or the big performances, where you think maybe you even got a glimpse into how Bruno Lage would like this side to be playing, or how a Bruno Lage Wolves team looks like when everything works. What games would those be? And then also the other end of the spectrum, you know, when everything didn't work, when everything sort of, or maybe a result that sort of exposed, you know, those issues that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's almost easier to do the second question first, because I think the first game that springs to mind of it really not working was against Brentford at home. We lost 2-0 and we looked all out of shape. We didn't know how to play against them. We looked like we didn't have a plan, which was sort of off the back of us doing quite well in the first three games, but not getting anything from it. Then I think we beat Watford, I want to say, and kind of got points on the board. And again, that Brentford result sort of, I think, shook them in terms of, actually, we can't just kind of go out and play free-flowing football if we don't, if we are not 100% focused at the back about not conceding. So the initial Brentford game was really, was poor, and identified kind of big gaping holes when, if everyone isn't on song and if everyone isn't on the same hymn sheet, then we struggle. There have been games later on this season, like Brighton, we didn't show up at all and we lost 3-0. In terms of games that have gone well, though, beating Man United away at Old Trafford, we played exceptionally well throughout the game. We got a goal eventually in the second half through a great, great passing movement. And also beating Spurs as well, because it was at a period when actually we kind of seemed to have struck on something, which was scoring early and putting a lot of pressure on early, because that then allowed us to sit back that extra yard and focus on, you know, being tight defensively as well. So I think we got two goals inside the first 13 minutes, I want to say, off the top of my head. And in my head, I was like, that's the plan, that's the blueprint of how Wolves should be playing, especially against sort of higher tier teams. Because actually, we're doing okay at that point against the lower level opposition in the league. You know, we'd beaten Everton at home comfortably. We picked apart Watford 4-0 at home because they were really poor at that point. But then sort of, it all kind of fell to pot, I think, against Leeds in March when we went 2-0 up. Jimenez got a sending off under somewhat controversial circumstances. And then, they after sending off, we then conceded 3 straight off the back. And I think it showed a mentality weakness, which we hadn't had before. And this was a team who was very strong and very sure of what they should be doing. And then there was lots of silly little defensive errors, which weren't like calamities, but they were, you should be doing better than that. It was preventable. Which I think we've had sort of too many of those second half of the season. And since then, we've really struggled to find our rhythm and find our feet.
Yeah, something I was going to come on to talk about perhaps towards the end, but it's, I mean, you look at the results, you look at the relative performances, and I think, you know, simplistically, people will look at it and go, how, you know, they're comfortably safe, they're in a good position, doesn't it look like that's going to change too much? There's this sort of feeling, I suppose, around the club that you are sort of treading water at the moment, because there needs to be some work done in the summer to really kick on and move the club forward. But in terms of the perception that the club are on the beach or anything like that, I saw some quotes from Cody coming out, and I think it was after the Chelsea game, I think perhaps, where you're saying that, you know, that was a good example to everybody who was leveling that at them, that they're not that they're not on the beach. They've still got that desire. However, I think, like you're talking about, you don't need to be on the beach necessarily, right? That slight drop off in intensity can lead to those defensive, you know, errors that weren't there, or you know, looking a little less with structure, things like that. Do you think that has been a problem for a while?
Yes, I think the loss of a couple of players defensively haven't helped. You know, Max Kilman has had an exceptionally strong season, and then he picked up an injury, which I think we lost a bit of that. We lost his presence at the back as well. And even Willy Bolly, who's an experienced player, has come in, hasn't really played at all this season. And you can see he struggled with injury a lot over the last 12 months.
He was a big influence, wasn't he? Yeah,
so he's not quite the same player. And against Nelson Semedo, he's kind of quietly gone under the radar, both what he gives us attacking and defensively. And Johnny's come in and done really well. But I think that double change hasn't really helped us defensively. And as I say, because Wolves work on these such fine margins, Jose Simon goal has been a fantastic signing. Arguably, he's been goalkeeper of the season. Potentially not on an eye test, but you look at the amount of goals Wolves were expected to concede and the amount that we actually have. And, you know, all of the statistical side of things, he is leaps and miles statistically beyond any other goalkeeper in this division at the moment, or has been over the course of the season. However, if your expected goals is a lot higher than what you're actually conceding, there's going to be a point where it does cancel each other out at some point, and you will start conceding more, which is what sort of happened. If he isn't on fire and if the defence aren't being restrictive, but you know, I joked earlier that, you know, we beat Watford 4-0 because they were incredibly poor. However, even Watford have shown this season they can turn teams over. Norwich have, again, from what was an incredibly poor start to them, have shown that they can score goals and they can pick up points. And you can and will get punished against good teams in this division. And, you know, I sort of agree with Connor Cody to a point where, you know, says that, oh, we weren't on the beach. It's, you know, for us to push to get a, you know, 90th minute equaliser against Chelsea, that shows that we still want it. But then if you follow that with a really poor draw against Norwich, or, you know, well, we lost to Man City afterwards, which I think, you know, just take that as red, to be honest.
But, no, yeah, you've got to be beating Norwich. Yeah, this Norwich. Yeah,
you know, you can't sort of have it both ways or say, oh, it's only for one game. The reason why Liverpool are in the position they're in because they want to win every single game and will leave everything out there. So you could argue, you know, you've mentioned about the lack of investment, the small squad that we had. Bruno said, it was like the first thing he said is, we need more players. We had, for the majority of this season, we've had three central midfielders. And no one can tell me that is a recipe for success in this division.
Crazy.
Bearing in mind, one of them is a 35-year-old.
Yeah. An elegant 35-year-old, but yes, still.
Fantastic. Don't get me wrong. He is still more than solid and capable enough. But you are only one, you know, Neves got injured for 8 games or something. And all of a sudden, you're left with Moutinho and Dendonka. Now Dendonka can only play in a three-man midfield. So if you've got one player who can only play well when he's with two other players, again, it's similar with almost a similar situation to Cody. Well, we can't have any midfielders on as a sub. And there will be a point where there will just be a natural drop-off in terms of their fitness level. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise to a degree that Neves was injured, and then he's come back earlier than expected. And lo and behold, he's been below par because he's clearly not 100% fit. And it adds up over time, and you don't necessarily feel it, you know, first half of the season or even two-thirds of the season. But it's no surprise that we've had sort of far more injuries second half of the year. And even though we've had players returning, like Willy Bolly, who, you know, was able to come in for Kilman, Johnny, who came back from a long-term injury, has came in for Semedo, Neto, has come back off a long-term injury and, you know, been able to help deliver. None of them have been 100%.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, hopefully having a solid, them all having a solid pre-season will give us those, you know, that cliche like a new signing, but we also need to bolster the current players we've got.
Yeah, no, I think Petro Neto certainly is one I'm very intrigued to see how he comes back, because I thought he was an incredibly exciting player. Actually, yeah, so interested to see how sort of he develops next season for sure. And actually, I was just thinking when you mentioned Moutinho, I think just one of my favourite interviews of the season. I think after he scored a great goal earlier in the season, I can't remember exactly what fixture it was, but he was doing some interview after the game. And trying to suggest that the coach had a word with him and you asked him to start shooting a little bit more. So you're 35 years old. He's like, okay, this is the point. Yeah, you're suddenly going to become a 15-goal a season, man.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, is it? And I think, you know, Bruno's been, you know, very open in terms of his opinions on players. And Neves, Moutinho and Dendonka all sort of occupy a similar role in the team. There's no real differentiation between them by and large, and it does mean we can't mix things up. There isn't a lot of variety, and Wolves have been in this division this soft fourth season in the Premier League now, and teams cotton on quickly if you're, you know, not even if you're not that good, or, you know, so for example, you look at Leeds. You know, we talk about second season syndrome a lot, don't we? And it's because after everyone's played sort of at least once. We did it against Brentford. We were struck with how they played. We got confused. We didn't like how they defended. They were nasty and gritty. But then when we played them the second time, we knew what we needed to do. And, you know, you almost hope that as a team coming up, that you can surprise teams enough to carry you through to the second season, and you invest in your more players and you develop and evolve. And it seems like it's taken Wolves that little bit longer to be sussed out. We haven't had that, say, that natural change in evolution, some of those players in down the spine. But we're also very lucky and gifted, but we have exceptionally good players as well. So we're not going to get found out to the same degree as a Leeds, because Ruben Neves came as a high quality caliber player. Same as Moutinho. That's not to say that Leeds don't, but it does mean that our threshold is that slightly bit higher. So our regression last season from 7th to 13th, I think it was, it's understandable because teams knew how we were going to play because we have the same players, we're playing the same system. But, you know, a West Ham will have worked that out and gone, well, we played these last year twice. They've got the same players, they've got the same manager. Nothing has changed about them. We weren't asking enough questions, and Bruno has done enough this season to make us be perceived differently in the league. But I think old habits have crept in the second half of the season for sure.
Yeah, and I was just having a quick look at some of the number of players who may be on the move this summer. I think Roman Saiz is sort of likely to go with his contract that ended up. I think Fernando Marcel, Ruddy. Maybe Gian Moutinho, the contract expires, but seems like he's going to be staying. Traore, of course, there's been that sort of saga ongoing, whether or not Barca will decide to keep him or not. Willy Bolly, who's, as you mentioned, perhaps not the same player as he once was. Is there a question to be had there? Then you've got Tadonka. He's maybe looking for a fresh start. Raul Jimenez as well. Yeah. And then I suppose the question is, as you were saying, I mean, to fund that sort of refresh, would you need to, let go of somebody like the crown jewel of Ruben Neves? I know that there's been some speculation around that, whether or not he's going to be staying on or not. I mean, rather than speculating over individual players at this stage, I just wanted to ask you, I suppose, which positions do you think are absolutely key to reinforce this summer? And then I suppose, of those players I mentioned, I mean, what are your thoughts on whether or not they're going to be staying?
I think it's primarily the spine of the team that needs addressing. Goalkeeper's fine. Jose Sarr's more than capable at this division. If we're switching to a back four, then we definitely need a new centre back, arguably to play alongside Max Kilman in a back four. However, then, as you know, I've already mentioned, we need more midfield. We need an additional midfielder or more dynamism within that. And you know, that's not even accounting the fact that then Donker will want first team football with a World Cup coming up. You know, he's a Belgium international, or you know, on and off at the very least. He's regularly in the squad. He was for the last international competitions. So he's going to want to secure his place. And Willie, if he's not playing all the time, you know, we've got arguably Morgan Gibbs-White can come back into this team now. And I think it'll be interesting to see what we do with him after a fantastic season at Sheffield United. And Wolves have got an option of whether they think he is ready for a Premier League and to compete in, you know, for a top half position, top half team in the Premier League, or whether we sell him for 15 million. Which, you know, would help fund us signing a new striker, which we desperately need. We have scored so few goals this season, particularly when you consider how few goals proportionally our attacking players have got. Raul Jimenez is our top goal scorer with 6 goals. That's not good enough for your leading striker in the Premier League. And it pains me to say it because every Wolves fan and football fan was so pleased to see him return to football after genuinely a life-threatening injury. For him to be back on the pitch is a miracle in itself. However, he has not been the same player this season. Part of that, you could argue, is systems or whatever. But even things like, you know, the amount of shots he's taken are lower. His shots on target percentage is low as well. So it's not just on one area. So there is an argument to say, actually, you know, can we be upgrading on him from his form last year? But historically, our attacking players don't get goals. Adama Traore's never consistently scored goals in his career. Fabio Silva, although he shows a lot of promise and has done well when he's played this season, even if he hasn't got any goals, has still not got any goals in the Premier League this season. Neto is coming back from injury, but I do believe that a fully fit Pedro Neto should be getting double figures in the Premier League next season. And I think that's probably what a viewpoint held by most. And then the one player Wolves did actually buy, we had Trincao on loan this season. And again, he's not someone who's prolific in front of goals at Wolves or historically. And we did end up getting Quang on loan and then bewilderingly signing him permanently in January because he scored 4 goals for us in about 6 games, but hasn't really done an awful lot since. But he's not scored goals historically. He didn't get any in the league for Leipzig. He got a very good record at Salzburg in his one season there. But that seems like it's a flash in the pan at this point. So Wolves definitely need to make sure they've got players, A, who can finish, but we also need to make sure we get the supply there from the midfield options as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so because you've had some sort of interesting stylistics of strikers in the past, I mean, sort of what kind of striker you envisage as being the perfect one for, you know, the approach that Bruno Lage wants to adopt?
We definitely need someone who can link up the play. A lot of Wolves' best games and best moments attacking-wise is where there's been a lot of good movement. And Jimenez has almost been acting like he's almost been the fulcrum in terms of being able to link up the play, but he's not ever been one to be on the end of it, which I think is interesting because it happened like quite a lot in the opening 10 games of the season, quarter of the season, where a lot of our chances fall into Adama Traore, who, as I've mentioned, isn't a natural finisher. But Jimenez was very sort of good at actually linking up the play and having that slightly better movement to open up the space for somebody else. However, we now need a player who can open up the space for somebody else and also get in the box as well. So I think they will still want a very much a focal point type of striker. And where, you know, we got linked to Divock Origi the last couple of years because everyone kind of assumed he was going to go at some point. But somebody who can actually open up those lines because we've got the pace out wide that it's not that we don't need a very fast striker, but we need someone who can be a bit of a totem pole and to be you know, someone who very much hangs out between the line, you know, between the goalposts, it won't stay very central to be on the end of chances.
No, of course. And just one person we haven't really talked about too much, actually, just as we get close to sort of wrapping things up. I mean, Bruno Lage, I mean, from the outside in, I think he's done a good job. I mean, I'm just interested in what you think of him, how you think he's carried himself in the role. I mean, how's your connection with fans, everything like that's always important as well when you've got a new manager joining a club where there's been such a beloved, you know, former manager at the club as well. I mean, how would you rate how he's done this season?
I think overall, it's interesting because obviously the last few games, there's been a negative slope the last month or so around Molineux. I think overall, if you go off league position, you know, if we finish eighth or ninth this season, I don't think we can be too disappointed because we have improved on last season with not a huge amount of financial backing for a manager, and full credit to that. And I think one thing Wolves have got right under its ownership is they have invested in coaches who do improve players and seem to be able to eke everything they can out of a set of players. I think with Bruno in general, though, he's very open and blunt in the press about what he thinks of his squad and also individual players as well. And there was an incident when we lost to Crystal Palace when he basically called out Janky Hoover in the press for not preparing hard enough for games and picking up an injury. And it was fair, you know, but since then there seems to be, I don't know, the atmosphere still hasn't been quite right. And a few times this season, he seems to be very good at setting up a team, but if it's not quite working, that ability to change it in game, we have struggled with. And that might be because he's not actually a wholly experienced coach. I think there was a lot of that. Or, as I said, it could be that teams have cottoned on to how we want to play. And I think a lot of that has happened the second half of the season because you have to, again, very open. But he made a comment about after, I cannot remember which game, but it was about the positions of our wing-backs and, you know, they identify when to push forward, judging on the position of the opposition full-backs. And since he made that comment, our full-backs haven't been as robust going forwards. So teams have clearly cottoned on to their own positional sense to be wary of our wing-backs pushing forward. So
a little bit too honest, yeah.
Yeah, so potentially he's almost been too honest to a degree, which I find quite interesting. I'm very much... I think I was looking at it today, but if you look at our, you know, second half of the season, our expected goals for and against are incredibly low. I think we're about 17th from the table for both. I think our expected points puts us in the relegation zone as well. However, there's a difference between expected points and the actual points you get. So I'm personally inclined to give him the summer because I think he's done enough to have that goodwill for a summer transfer window. If he's going to be backed and if they think, actually, you know what, the justification for our poor form second half of the season is because of squad size, which has impacted injuries and not having the certain personnel that he wants, then you've got to hope that having a transfer window. And I think for a lot of clubs next season, my kind of theory is that we've got a Winter World Cup this year, and that's going to be a very good opportunity for clubs to make a decision on their managers. But actually, we could play until mid-November, where we'll have played, 10 to 12 games at that point, if that. But it would allow them to make a decision. And if it isn't working next year, and if our expected goals against and goals scored become our actual goals scored, and we're 17th in the league after 10 games, and we've got a Winter World Cup happening, there is a perfect... break opportunity at that point where they can go, you know what, let's move on now we can get a manager in who can work with the players who aren't on international duty, and we can plan ahead for 6 weeks' time when everybody's back, and then we'll have a transfer window. So I'd be very much inclined to give him the summer, because overall it's worked. Unfortunately, his style of play and his philosophy came in, he hasn't either been able to implement, or, you know, for one reason or another, whether it's the players that we've got or whatever. But yeah, I think overall I can't be too disappointed, because, you know, we've done better than we have last season, and yeah, it's incremental gains at this point. However, everyone, you don't have to invest lots of money, I think, to be successful, but you do need to continue investing in the team. If you're not moving forwards, you are moving backwards. And, you know, there's a really strong chance that Leicester will finish above us. They will invest again in the summer. They will spend, you know, they'll make a couple of £15-20 million signings. Aston Villa are always making signings, whether they're good or bad. You know, there's a couple of teams who overtook us last season, and we didn't invest in Nuno's last season particularly.
Yeah. I think it's imperative. Yeah, I think
there
needs to be that investment in the squad, just to, not necessarily a huge amount of money, but I think just freshen up positions, allow the manager some flexibility. I mean, I know it's sort of different comparisons, but I think one of Liverpool's strengths this season has definitely been the fact that for the first time in quite a while, actually, it's felt as though Klopp has flexibility. I mean, it sounds almost greedy saying that, because he's got such a wonderful set of players to work with, but it's usually been the same core group of players, and now there's a few more who can actually come in, and the level doesn't drop off the way which it did, right?
You know, you look at even likes of Curtis Jones, and I remember speaking to on another Liverpool podcast last year, and said he's gone from being a young player in the squad to being a squad regular, and the drop off in intensity. Actually, I can't remember if he started the other day against.
He did, he started. Yeah. Taki Minamino, those sorts of players.
And even, like, you know, quietly, it's like the additions of Harvey Elliott, who, you know, before his injury was a first choice midfielder for you for the first time this, you know. He had a great loan spell the season before, and then he got integrated into that team. And I know that they spent money on him previously to sign him in the first place, but that's might be, you know, our comparison would be Morgan Gibbs-White, that he's had a couple of loan spells now to hone his craft and show that this is what I can do when you give me a run in the team. You know, you've got fans like me crying out saying, we need a midfielder who can break into the box, who can, you know, go past a player, who can really kind of, you know, break the lines. Or I'm knocking out all the cliches now, but actually, if that's what we're after, we don't necessarily need to spend that £16 million, but we can't have it both ways. So it's either they need to commit and say, you know what, we are building our team on this structure, Gibbs White is like a new signing, or we just need to go out and buy one. We can't send him out on loan again. We need to either replay. We either need to utilise the money we spend on him, or utilise the player himself.
Absolutely. And I think, just one final question then, just to wrap things up then. I mean, given all of that we've discussed, I mean, what team are you expecting to show up at Anfield on the Sunday? Obviously, feels like there's a lot riding on it. It could all be completely in vain in the end, but... yeah, certainly quite proud that we've managed to drag it to this final game and leave ourselves a chance of winning. There's going to be a huge amount of intensity on Liverpool to get those 3 points. But, I mean, what sort of Wolverhampton Wanderers are you expecting to turn up? I know which kind the listeners are hoping for, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Sunglasses out.
Yeah, I feel so negative when I say it, but, like, not a particularly solid one. You know, against Man City, you know, we played them 10 days ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Kevin De Bruyne was the best player in the league on that day. Yeah. And he was phenomenal. And not a lot of the other Man City players were amazing, but he was phenomenal.
There's always one, isn't there?
Yeah, I was going to say, if it wasn't him, it would be Phil Foden. If it wasn't him, it would be Mahrez. But, you know, but actually, when we brought it back to 1-1, and then we conceded again and again. and then really trailed off second half. And I struggle to see Wolves being able to approach this game with the intensity and the desires to match what Liverpool's are. And we'll know, I guess, how much Wolves are up for it if and when they, at what point they don't concede. So I think if Wolves can ride out the first 15, 20 minutes, then we'll know that this is, you know, Wolves are here now. They want this game. If we concede early doors, we might as well go home and start watching the Man City game and seeing what they're doing, because I struggle to see Wolves mounting anything into the game if they've already conceded in it. In terms of player-wise, the last game we played was sort of interesting because John Ruddy came in for Sarr, and I think that was sort of probably a bit of a farewell for him. I assumed anyway, because as you mentioned, he's out of contract. He's, you know, mid-30s now. It was also against his former team who he'd spent a lot of time with. I don't think he's got any indications of retiring, but actually, if that was his last game, it ticks an awful lot of boxes sentimentally. And, you know, I was going to say, seemingly, Connor Cody got hooked at halftime against Norwich, so that was apparently tactical. I don't think we can afford that against Liverpool if we, you know, don't want to be completely embarrassed, because I know there is still a question of goal difference as well, I believe. I don't think it kind of works with the point stuff now. I think it would involve Man City losing 6-0 and us drawing 5-all with one another. But it'll be a question of whether he wants to give additional minutes to people who we know who are going to be here next season. So, for example, I probably wouldn't start Trincão because he's on loan. He hasn't made that much of an emotional impact with fans that we need to give him a fond farewell. So why don't we play Neto, who we know is going to be here next season, who would, I was going to say, be appreciative of the minutes, would still be working hard for those minutes? Do you start Fabio Silva? Because again, there's not been lots of rumblings about Jimenez, but there's been enough to say that, well, hang on, we know Fabio Silva's going to be here next year. Let's give him a game. There's not that much of a drop-off in quality. So I'm interested to see what the Wolves team is. And more importantly, how we line up, whether we go for a three-man midfield. Because I think if we go for a three-man midfield, I think it indicates that Wolves are very much looking to compete and restrict Liverpool more than we might necessarily assume. Because, you know, if we're playing a two-man midfield, we'll probably get decimated, frankly. But I think if we go for a three-man, it will show that we are still really committing something to the game.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we see that two-man midfield. I'm not going to lie. Really. I think, yeah, my focus is at this stage is just, yeah, doing whatever it takes to get the win. And then I don't know what sort of witch doctors I need to contact around the happenings at Villa Park. But yeah, let's see. Let's see. I mean, it's, as I said, yeah, it's just good to be, privileged to be at this stage anyway. So anyway, Rich, thank you so much for coming on, giving us all your insight into Wolves season. I think, as you've said, it's that this summer is going to be an incredibly intriguing one in terms of sort of where this side can move to. But before we did wrap up, was there anything that you wanted to plug on your end?
Yeah, I will plug Wolves Fancast. So we are the longest running independent Wolves podcast. Make sure you check us out for all your Wolves lols and trolls at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I've previously been on one of the YouTube sort of shows as well, actually. Yeah, in the past, and that was a good laugh as well. So yeah, definitely encourage people to check it out. And as I said, set to be a very intriguing summer, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interesting content coming out across the fan cast. And then to the listeners, this is the very last episode of the season, obviously, with us focusing on ahead of each and every Premier League game. So thank you very much for joining me on the journey. Not going to lie, it's probably been made a little bit easier for me, given the team has been doing well this time. I think last season with the lack of centre backs, even though it did end up pretty well, felt like a sort of rinse and repeating on these shows quite a lot. So yeah, it's been a privilege to cover all these games I'm sure all the listeners will be hoping for the same result on Sunday, even if it does feel a little bit like we're going to be needing some magic for it to go that way. Otherwise, yeah, thank you for listening to Rival Recon this season. We'll be back with some episodes in preseason ahead of the next campaign. But otherwise, let's cross our fingers and hope for the best this Sunday.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.